I've taken a reading this morning from Shakespeare. What a piece of work is a man, how noble in reason, how infinite in faculty, in form and moving, how expressed and admirable, in action, how like an angel, in apprehension, how like a god. The beauty of the world, the paragon of animals, and yet, to me, what is this quintessence of dust? What indeed? Scientists tell us the Y chromosome is the only chromosome not necessary for life. In about 4.5 million years, they say it will no longer exist. Nevertheless, we persist. We are Unitarian Universalists, and we examine everything. What is this quintessence of dust? How many roads must a man walk down? We seek answers and know that we will find only more questions. 4 intrepid members of our fellowship have agreed to talk personally today about the tricky issue of being a man in these days of changing times, changing roles, and changing expectations. You know them, or maybe you just thought you did. In order of appearance, Doug Watson, Steve Silver, Scott Winters, Joe Boyd. And now, Doug, the floor is yours.
Thank you for applauding in advance. What have I learned about being a man in today's culture? One assumes the implication is that today's culture is vastly different from earlier times. I suppose that the women's liberation movement, the Equal Rights Amendment, and Me Too have ushered in new levels of equality to which we men have had to adjust in the home and in the workplace. That does not mean, as some conservatives have claimed, that there is a war on men. Like many of us, I grew up in a decidedly two-sex world. Men and women were deemed to have defining characteristics and defined cultural roles. Gays, lesbians, and transgenders were closeted and did not factor into the equation. Men were seen as aggressive, rational, strong physically and emotionally. Women were considered to be nurturing, emotional, and weak. Men were the breadwinners, women the homemakers. And even after Rosie the Riveter of the Second World War, women were pretty much limited to teaching, nursing, and secretarial careers if they ventured outside the home. So much of that has changed and dragged me along with it. Women are now found in journalism, executive suites, corporate boardrooms, courts of law, prominent ranks of the active military, in professional sports, in science labs, and in technical fields. So what have I learned about being a man in today's world? I resisted these changes less than many, I suppose, because I have 4 sisters, one of whom is a lesbian, and also because of the example of manhood that was set by my father. For much of my youth, my mother was in poor health, and my dad, while being the sole breadwinner, took on many responsibilities in the home. He got up early, got the breakfast, got us off to school. He did the grocery shopping, the laundry, the washing and waxing of the floors, and other household chores. So early on, I had a good example of manhood that others may not have had. The lessons I learned was that it was not unmanly to cook, to dust, to vacuum, to launder, or to grocery shop. Gentlemanly behavior toward women need not be lost in a search for greater gender equality. Equal does not mean identical. I worked in the car industry that for years was considered to be the province of men, but an industry in which women soon began to play an important role. And, in fact, I had a female superior for much of my career. The academic path I chose, theology, has rightly become more and more populated by brilliant women including my sister and our own pastor. There seems to be a sense that men have to be exceptional, as if there is some newfound competition between the genders. I have learned that that need not be so. What I have learned can be summed up by saying, it is okay to be a baritone. One does not need to be a soaring lyric tenor or possess a deep resonant bass voice in order to be a man. It is okay to be, like most of us, a baritone. One chooses not to be a wimp, but it is not necessary to be a massive muscular hunk or a jock to be considered masculine. Being active and healthy is just fine. One does not have to be a sentimental slobberer or an expressionless stoic to be truly manly, but sometimes it is okay to be brought to tears. It is not desirable to be a sycophant or a milquetoast with no option and no opinion of one's own, nor is it a sign of manhood that one is brazenly opinionated and overbearing. But it is important to have well-informed opinions and quietly to stand by them. By one's labor and initiative, one ought not to be poor, but one does not need to be wealthy to be fully a man. It is okay to be content with enough and to be as generous as one can. It is not okay to be a scoundrel, but one need not be a saintly monk. Being a caring, compassionate human being is all that most of us can attain. It is okay to be a baritone. To be a man in this or any other age or culture means being a man in relationship, by which I affirm that no man is an island. We are in many respects the sum product of our many relationships with our life partners, with our extended families, with our friendships and associations, with our faith community, with strangers in our midst, and with the natural world. I resonate with Martin Buber's A Believing Humanism, by which he means that the other in all our relationships is seen to be as a thou, as to be respected and valued, and never as an it, as something to be used. What I have learned is not new. What is required of you, O man, but to love mercy, do justly, and walk humbly? What does it profit a man to gain the whole world, but lose his own self-worth? You must be born again. It is perfectly natural to move from the utter dependency of childhood to the independence of adolescence, but one must then mature to interdependence to become fully human, both dependent and dependable. These are insights that are valid in any age and culture, even when stripped of their theistic roots. So I have learned and continue to learn.
When Reverend Tracy asked me if I talk briefly about what it's like to be a man, my first thought was that my wife put her up to this. My next concern was to figure out how to weasel out of it. But as I chewed on it a bit, I started reviewing my life to pinpoint certain events that had a major impact on me and that shaped me into becoming who I am. It's clear to me that there was no class in school, no merit badge in Scouts, not even a Big Brother sit down to teach me the finer points of being a man. In the Jewish religion, becoming a man was relatively painless. Sprinkle in several years of Hebrew school, add a dash of Torah reading, and top it off with 2 days in front of family and friends to celebrate my bar mitzvah, defined as the coming of age, and considered the age of accountability. I was now, in the eyes of Jewish tradition, a man. Religion has really been at the forefront of my life. Yes, I had a happy Jewish upbringing, lit Sabbath candles on Friday night, no pork in the house, and bar mitzvah at 13, and joined a Jewish fraternity in high school, which ensured that my friends and dates would be Jewish to my parents' pleasure. This was my childhood bubble. In college, I was in a Jewish fraternity whose house was located across the street from the Baptist Student Union and Church of Christ. Mostly everyone got along, or at least it seemed this way from inside my college bubble. Early my freshman year, I became friends with a classmate who, I learned, was Southern Baptist. Rather than feeling pressure to see her way, she was genuinely interested in our beliefs, our traditions, and the differences to her religious views. And it was at this time that I really began wondering about Judaism, both from a religious and social aspect. This internal questioning about my Jewishness became a nagging issue from this point in my life. With my dating and subsequent marriage to Tracy, not the Reverend, but my wife Tracy, I experienced the social repercussions from my family and friends, disguised as concern for my well-being, that quite honestly shocked me. That which was never discussed in family heart-to-heart all of a sudden became the sin of sins. My options were simple. I was to either, one, tell Tracy to convert, two, break up with her for her own good. Of course, the unspoken third option was to do what was most important to me, regardless of the consequences. Being a proud mama's boy and an otherwise respectful son, this third option was a pain like no other, but empowered me to think for myself. As difficult as it was to betray my parents, who otherwise had provided a close, loving household, as hard as it was to be scorned by friends, some of whom I grew up with, who questioned my personal decision as if they knew what was best for me, and as gut-wrenching as it had felt to be deceived by the only way of life that I knew and enjoyed, this was the moment I felt I had to grow up and become a man. So what have I learned about being a man? Everyone goes through his own life experiences. Some are painful, others are exciting. All of them play a part in who we become. Hopefully we take something from these experiences that help us muddle through life and perhaps use as a teaching moment for our kids.
Good morning, everybody. I identify as a gay, cisgender, white man and use he and him for my pronouns. And I'm very excited to be able to be asked to talk today about this topic of men. I love men. And I love being a man. And I think that each of us, all four of us, could have taken one Sunday this month and had a whole sermon just on what we want to say. But since we each have about 5 minutes today, I decided to talk about my experience as a man and the experience I've had with other men who are grieving a loss. As some of you know, close to about a year ago, I went through a divorce from my husband of 17 years. And the grief that came upon me was much greater and much deeper than I ever thought that I could experience. I often hear women and other folks talk about going through difficult times and discovering how much stronger that they thought they were. For me, grief has caused me to realize I'm much weaker than I ever thought that I was. And I often hear this from men, that we never knew something could happen to us to cause us to feel so powerless and so lost. Perhaps there are better words that I could use that are more affirming, but it's when we don't feel strong and when we don't know what to do about it. Grief can come from a myriad of losses throughout our lives, and perhaps it was the loss of your father, mother, grandparent, best friend, spouse, or even a child. Perhaps it was the loss of a job, your health, your house, or your dreams. Men can grieve very differently than women. We've not often learned how to express and accept our feelings of loss and sadness. We can feel embarrassed or ashamed to appear weak in front of other men. We can easily ignore, avoid, and deny our feelings. And work is a great distraction for a lot of us. So our theme this month is about journey. And we've all heard the metaphor that grief is a journey that all of us must take at some point in our lives. Grief is about experiencing the many unexpected twists and turns of our emotions, feeling of being lost is also a part of grief. Feeling surprised when it decides to show up again after months in hibernation, not knowing where we are going. Men are often expected to know the way, to be the leader, to be the one who helps instill confidence that everything's going to be all right. But sometimes things don't turn out all right. And the shame that a man can feel when he cannot provide for his family, cannot work, cannot be strong, cannot be intimate, can be so discouraging. Men are often raised to be strong, to not show feelings, to be stoic, as others have said this morning. In my work as a chaplain and a spiritual care counselor, I see the struggle that men can have to ask for support, particularly when we can't do things for ourselves anymore, when we need to rely on others for support. It goes against the grain of what our culture often expects us, to be strong and confident and self-reliant. Feelings of grief can be especially difficult for men, and that we often don't know what to do with all the confusing feelings of change. Now, I know this can be a very challenging topic, and we don't have more time to delve deeper, and it might have been more fun for me just to talk about why so many men enjoy sports, barbecues, and cars. However, I've learned that listening to men and helping men to feel the acceptance of another man can be helpful and affirming during times of loss. And perhaps it's over watching sports or eating barbecue. And being a member of a community like this, like WOOF, can also bring a sense of belonging, that we are not alone on our journey. The men in this community have supported me this past year in my loss. And men have shared openly up here during joys and concerns as well. This community is where we can be men who are strong through being vulnerable, men who are doers as well as healers. There's important work here, and every man is needed to build this beloved community, to bring our losses as well as our strengths. As men, we can take the risk and remind each other that we are not alone, that other men can understand our feelings, and that we can create energy and bonding together. As Mary Oliver has said, this is about living out our one wild and precious life.
Three tough acts to follow. Accept the challenge. That's what I learned about being a man. Obviously, it can apply to both men and women, but I can give only the man's view. The challenge can be large or small. Accepting it just has to scare me to some degree. For example, I'm standing up here giving this talk. At the last worship team meeting, we were discussing this service. Since it's the weekend of the women's retreat, Reverend Tracy had the idea of this type of service. I don't like public speaking. But the topic was fascinating, so I volunteered. Later, when I was trying to get started on the talk, I asked myself why on earth I had signed up. The answer turned out to be the topic. Another personal challenge I'll mention is that about 25 years ago, I quit drinking. At the time, I drank quite a bit. In fact, I'd been making my own beer for about 10 years. I was in personal therapy at the time, and the therapist pointed out that when I quit drinking, and I was planning to, my personality would change, and that would change our relationship. The following weekend, I poured several gallons of my own beer down the drain. Since then, I still have a beer every once in a while, perhaps at an auction dinner. I do like the stuff.
So the ongoing challenge is to occasionally enjoy a beer while I stay in control of that part of my life. Those are a couple of the personal challenges I've accepted. Going forward, it seems to me that there's one big challenge that all men will have to face. You've heard about it in a little bit. Our culture is changing. The differences between the roles of men and women are becoming more blurred. In a sense, this started in World War II when women had to go work in the factories to produce the equipment that the men were using to fight the war. Immediately after the war, the men came home, and so did the women. But the seed was planted. Now we are seeing instances where the traditional roles are becoming reversed. Women return to work after having a child, while the man stays home to care for the baby. I actually know one couple where, after she had the children, they were both working before they had kids. And once they had a baby, she went back to work because her job paid better. And he's a stay-at-home dad. Partners of the same sex are adopting children. Women are entering more roles, including combat, that formerly belonged solely to men. So there it is, guys. The challenge we need to accept is that we're moving into a world that never existed before, a culture where the roles of men and women are merging into roles of human beings.
Thank you, Joe and Scott and Steve and Doug. We'll have some time for comments after we sing. We have time left for comments, and perhaps you can share one thing that you have learned about being a man in today's culture, or in living with a man, or with knowing a man in today's culture.
Well, in the process of living with a man and raising a son, two sons, I think it's really difficult now because to me the expectations seem to be so either or. You are either a jock and a strong man, or you are a tender, what my kids say, snag, sensitive new age guy. And it's just hard.
I think there are four qualities that are good in being a good man, and I think of these especially in relating to women. Gentleness, a very good sense of humor, especially being the laugh at oneself, being a very, very good and patient listener, and very important, being able to say, yes, dear, as many times as necessary.
I'm not quite sure how to say this. I was thinking that this would be a little different than what it was, but I recognize I'm not the audience. A lot of the men here, you are the audience here. But being a person, I'm sure a lot of women here can say or witness that we've been harmed by toxic masculinity and the way that masculinity is portrayed even today. So we've talked, people come up here and talked about how masculinity has changed, but it hasn't in so many ways, and it still harms people. And I just feel like that needs to be said, that there is a lot more effort that everyone here needs to do. Women standing up, saying what they mean, where the lines are for themselves, for men around them, and men as well.
I grew up in a generation that we grew up one way and we ended up another way, and someplace in the middle it all changed and it's been very confusing. I find that now the things that are expected of women were the things that have always been expected of men. We're expected to do it all. We're expected to be strong. We're expected to be able to earn our own living. At the same time, we're still the nurturers, as are the men becoming more nurturing. So I think the burden has kind of shifted a little bit. There's still the Me Too movement and a real need for that, but as a person who was widowed, unexpectedly widowed, I had to suck it up and make it do, and I ended up going through something that made me very much stronger than I ever thought I would be. And so I feel like women now are bearing the burden of having to do it all, having to be it all. And that's really tough for people of my generation, because I was raised like Doug was, with mama stayed home and cooked the meals and daddy earned the living. So it's been a quite a ride.
Well, I got to grow up in a different kind of generation. I'm young, and my father, when he was a Marine, and he was a very macho guy, but he softened a lot, so I was told from family when he became a father. And growing up, he was the one that taught me how to sew. He was the one that taught me how to cook, how to iron clothes, and he taught me that just because I was a woman didn't mean that I was worth any less than a man. And he said, your mother chose to be a housewife. That's the kind of life she wanted. But you can be anything you want to be. You can do anything you want to do. You don't need to get married and rely on your husband for things. You can go out and do the things that you want to do with your life and be independent and be strong. And he taught the same kind of things to my brother, that he needed to be, you know, nurturing and help out with raising the kids, and it wasn't his wife did everything, that he also had to pitch in and do these things, and that's what was expected of him. So I grew up with a really nice balance and a sense of equality in my household, and it was really cool.
I'd like to say that generations make a difference. So when I look at my grandson, I say, well, this is a generation, it's no problem for him being a man, because his generation is a change. They're living to change. There's nothing to adapt to. And for my generation, the older generation, it's a time of reflection. It's not a problem. You can look and put things in perspective. But for those in the middle, it's a time of confusion. And I think compassion for those in confusion.
So I've been thinking a lot about our donor recently, and just feeling so generous or so grateful for his generosity. So I carried our son, Ursa. He's now 17 months old, and our family wouldn't be possible without the generosity of our donor, whom we know. But didn't know. We met him on the internet looking for a donor, and he is at the heart of what is a really special community of queer families. He's enabled 8 different families to have children, and just feels like that's his social justice call, is as a gay man and someone who believes deeply in the love that's possible in queer families, that those exist. And I've just been thinking of what a generous and gentle and kind and special person he is, and I'm very grateful that my son has his genetics. And and so I think that, you know, this modern world we're in really does offer some unique opportunities for men to create the kind of world that they want to see, and I feel really blessed to have been a recipient of some generosity and kindness.
I
as times are changing in the present, I think it's always an opportunity to reevaluate what we think we know about the past and the stories that we choose to select always leaves out quite a few others. So I think the way we viewed gender dynamics in the past is more a reflection about the dominant culture at the time rather than any historical truths. So as we think about the people we want to become, who in the past do we want to select as telling us truths about who we have been and where we're going?
Well, people are bringing up gender roles here, and for me, I grew up at a time in life when everything was perfectly clear. All men were heterosexual, all women were heterosexual, and we all just did our things. And I think as a heterosexual man, one of the things that I have had to be learning as I went on is that not everyone in the world is like me, and many people have relationships with one another that I frankly don't understand. But not understanding them does not make them wrong or something that I can't associate with. And so I think the main thing that I have learned in life is that I have to accept many things that I don't understand.
I was fortunate to grow up in a family where these gender differences weren't emphasized. I guess my grandmother and her five older sisters were born in the 19th century and they all went to college. And so women could work and could do whatever they wanted, and men could too. I think the plus now is that men and women are being called to be more fully human, to accept all aspects of themselves. And I think that's a gift for all of us. And I'm hopeful that things will continue overall to work in the direction of love and acceptance.
Hi there. I think this is a great topic, and I just wanted to add a comment from the viewpoint of men and women in the workplace. I work for an agency that's kind of gone through its own little mini Me Too moment recently, and I'm also an attorney, so I need to take continuing legal education requirements, which now includes access to justice. And it's interesting, mention was made of how many women are entering professions and so on. It's true, there are probably now more women law students than there are. When I entered the profession, there were only 7% of attorneys were women. But still, if you look at who's at the very top of the profession, it's not women. It's not proportional. And so the question is, like, why is this? And I started taking some of these trainings that are required, and I learned about something called implicit bias. And just one quick factoid that really spoke to me, if men and women are in a meeting together and you're discussing something, women are 7 times more likely to be interrupted. And it's in almost in every case, it's a negative interruption. You're ignored, you're spoken over, your idea is stolen, whatever. We all know how these meetings go. On the other hand, a man might be interrupted one time, and it's going to be positive. Good point, great idea, let's go with that. And I started to learn about something of implicit bias. So there's this whole area developing called diversity, equity, and inclusion in DEI. And there are actually some tools and some research, and we're kind of walking around with our little how-to pages. When you get talked over in a meeting, get out your little worksheet and your matrix, and what should you say? So how can you respond to it? Because we can't wait until the world is perfect before we try to make things better. And I'm hoping that some of these tools, and I just thought it was me, you know, but it isn't just me. There's a whole kind of implicit bias that we're all a part of, and there are some really tools being developed to effectively address that. And I'm speaking more in the professional realm, but I think some of these tools can play in the workplace too, and I would like to see WOF more actively pursue some of these diversity, equity, inclusion tools.
Good idea.
A couple thoughts I had. One of the biggest things
I've learned a lot from my kids. You know, the younger generation really changing how I listen. But the biggest thing I think that I really need to work on, and I think a lot of people do, is that the message that they send is the message that's received. Because frequently I have tried to use humor as a de-escalation when things get kind of tense. But that can come off as condescending or, you know, making something seem less important than it really is. And that's not the intention, and it's really difficult sometimes to keep a dialogue open and light while still having some sort of meaningful thing. The other part of it, too, that I grew up in Des Moines, Iowa, very white, middle of the country, and one of the first, my first coworker out of college was black. And I, as a young, I mean, just out of college kid, I said, you know, and he was about 10 years older than I was. I said, do you prefer black, African American? You know, how should I, you know, use it? And one of the things he said to me that really is, I think, important in any thing where you're trying to generalize stuff is he said, I don't speak for all people. I prefer, you know, black, but, you know, some people prefer African American. And I didn't really think about it in that, because when your world context is fairly small, this one person can be your gateway to learning. And in talking about, you know, gender and roles and things like that, it's tough to know, for me as a man, where certain people believe. Because I've had some friends that were Christian, that firmly believed that it was God, then man, and then the woman. And I have a hard time with that. It's not something I believe. But you never know where somebody's coming from. And looking at from an age perspective, too, some of the things my mom has said, I don't believe, but it was the accepted thing at the time. She talked about martini lunches, you know, at work and smoking in the workplace, and things change. But different people are at different points in their life about what's acceptable to them, men and women and all that. So it's really hard to know as a man or a woman, I think, or anybody that's dealing with something that they're not familiar with or that they want to learn about and to communicate in a meaningful and helpful and encouraging way.
Okay, we have time for one more.
I never really thought of it this way. Some of you know that I lost my older son about 8 years ago. In fact, it's 28 years on March 26th. And as I was listening to these men, I realized that one of the things that killed him was masculinity, toxic masculinity. It was fast cars. It was this culture of, you know, need for speed. And it's, you know, it's manly to go fast and take chances. And from that perspective, I think this toxic masculinity, we're killing ourselves. And so something definitely has to change.
All we have to do is wait 4.5 million years for those Y chromosomes to disappear. Can we wait that long? Some of us are trying to change it now, I'm sure.